From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us for this special election edition. On today's show, a conversation with Rebecca Trammell, a nonprofit founder, community organizer, and advocate for public education funding, who aims to run as an unaffiliated candidate for North Carolina's Senate District 7. That covers most of New Hanover County, except for a small notch of downtown Wilmington. Now, in order to get on the general election ballot in November, Trammell needs to have a petition signed by 4% of the registered voters in District 7, and that's about 7,000 people. The petition is due by noon on Tuesday, March 3rd, which is primary election day. So, in a sense, Trammell is in a one-person primary race. If Trammell can get enough signatures, she'll face Democrat Jessica Bickler, a small business owner and relative newcomer to politics, and incumbent Republican Michael Lee, one of the most powerful people in Raleigh. Neither Bickler or Lee have primary opponents. And based on the past few elections, the race for District 7's Senate seat will be hard-fought and expensive. In 2024, we saw millions of dollars from both Republican and Democratic parties pouring into New Hanover County. Trammell has positioned herself as a voice for the politically unaffiliated. It's the largest single group of voters, both in the state of North Carolina and here locally. It's a group she says has rejected both parties for failing to truly represent them. We sat down with her in the WHQR studios to talk about how her policy positions fit into North Carolina's complicated and sometimes polarizing environment. All right, Rebecca Trammell, thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so you are hoping to run as an unaffiliated candidate for Senate District 7, which covers most but not all of New Hanover County. But to do that, you need
7,000-ish
signatures on a petition. And those are due by noon on the day of the primary election, Tuesday, March 3rd. So that is your first battle, right?
That's right.
So tell me a little bit about this campaign and what some of your key issues are that you are hoping people will, at the very least, be interested enough to put their name on a list.
Sure. So I decided to run as an unaffiliated candidate because I believe that the people of New Hanover County deserve to have a choice in who represents them. And right now, the majority of New Hanover County is unaffiliated, and we are unaffiliated for a reason, and we still deserve representation. And so I'm seeing that really things are polarized, and they're becoming more polarized, and we need to create common ground where we actually have conversations and engage one another. And that's what I do. That's kind of my day job, literally, you know, community conversations. And I think that we're better together, and I think that we need to listen to one another, hear one another, and I think, honestly, we actually agree on so many issues, but you would never know that from the current conversation. So I am running. We call our campaign Run with Rebecca because I'm not running alone. I'm running with the people of New Hanover County, whoever chooses to run with me. I don't have a party, but I do have, I hope to have the people. And the issues that I'm running on, I think, are commonly felt by most people. And number one, I think we need to end gerrymandering. It's time for the people to choose who represents them rather than allowing elected officials to choose who they represent.
So certainly long, at times ugly, history of gerrymandering in North Carolina. Republicans have done it of late. Democrats did it before that. How would you handle, you know, because we do have to district. We do have to carve this crazy state up into chunks. So how would you handle that?
We need to get an independent team of experts to do that. We do not need politicians doing that. Constituents elect candidates. Elected officials do not choose they don't choose us. We choose them. And I think that that's been backwards for too long. And if they choose us, then we can't hold them accountable. And that really needs to stop. So I think that if we have an independent group of people who are deciding what the districts are going to be, they need to be data analysts. It needs to be politically neutral. It just needs to be, how do these districts need to be carved out so that the people have the best representation?
Another one of your issues I've heard you talk about, this will not surprise anyone who knows you, or has seen your name in the news before is education funding.
Yes.
So North Carolina recently ranked really poorly, if not dead last, in the lower percentiles for funding for public education. Give us a little bit of your take on that.
Well, it doesn't come as a surprise to me that we were 50th and 51st in the nation when it came to funding, you know, per pupil funding or funding effort. We actually have the money. We just choose not to invest in our public schools. And I think it is, it's tragic. It's a tragic misuse of our tax dollars. So I think people think that, oh, wasting money is a misuse of our tax dollars. Well, it's also a misuse of our tax dollars to allow them to sit in our treasury collecting interest while 10,000 teachers quit at a time, while our children are not reading proficiently enough to be considered on track for college or career. And so, yes, we need to fund the Leandro Comprehensive Remedial Plan. We need to stop violating the constitutional rights of our children. And if I were in Raleigh, I would challenge my fellow lawmakers to not need to rely on a court decision to follow the Constitution and put our kids first. Yes, we will fund our public schools, we will support our teachers, and we will make sure that every child has a chance.
The last of the three issues that I've seen, at least online and in print that you've talked about, and this I hear from the lips of just about everyone I talk to, irrespective of party, and that's affordability. So that's housing affordability, but it's more than that. Tell me, how do you think about this issue from the point of view of the General Assembly?
I think we need to address cost of living. And right now, I'll be honest with you, a lot of it's more of a, I'm looking at it from a very holistic view. And it might seem a little dreamy, and it might be dreamy at this point, but it won't be, because I always find a plan. And so right now, I see cost of living not just as housing, but healthcare and the things that it takes to live and thrive. Because right now, people are working two and three jobs. We don't have time to live this life. We don't have time to breathe. We have time to work. And not even in working doesn't always get us a house anymore. It doesn't always get us healthcare anymore. And we need to take a really hard look as to why at one point we could live off of one salary in a two-parent, you know, household. And today we can't make it with two people working. And no, I think that there are tangible, practical ways to manage these costs. I'm looking at it also from what just happened with our teachers. Sure, they gave them a little bit of raise that probably doesn't really match the cost of living, but they also increased their insurance premiums. So that's not a raise. They ended up like doing worse than they were before. Those are the kind of things that we need to look at. I think that there are people that are honestly smarter than me when it comes to economics, and I'm very well aware of it. Part of leadership is not just doing everything well, but knowing when there's something that you don't know that other people do know well. And I would bring in experts, economists, and I would bring in business leaders. I would bring in small business and large business owners and employees and find out what is it that we need to do. I bring in the experts in all the fields, healthcare, housing. We need to sit down and talk, and we need to figure out what we're willing to do to make sure that people have the chance to not just work to live. But right now, people are living to work and not working to live, and we need to change that too.
So even if there's not a concrete plan that you have yet, do you have any broad strokes for people to think about? I mean, there are different schools of thought. There are schools of thought where the government steps in and provides money to people, whether that's in the form of child care credits or, you know, tax breaks for housing or whatever that is. And there are schools of thought where it's like, we just need to make it easier for people to afford stuff by cutting their tax rates. It's a fiscal conservative argument. So, mm-hmm. You know, I've heard from a lot of Republicans that, you know, North Carolina's very low income tax rate and low corporate tax rate makes it easier for people to live and easier for people to start businesses, which provide jobs. I mean, does that argument resonate with you, or do you feel like it needs to be more along the lines of government intervention?
I don't think it's one or the other. I think that everybody deserves to prosper off of their effort. And right now, clearly, some people are benefiting way more than others. And that's what we have to address. And I need to take a long, hard look at that with people who can advise me on that.
I want to touch on some of the other state level issues that we've seen candidates drill down on in the past couple of years. The first, and you know, I think Republicans consider this settled. I don't think everyone considers this settled. Where do you stand on North Carolina's current laws around abortion access?
Sure. So I have a very nuanced opinion about this because I believe both that we have the right to choose and we're responsible for our choices. I also believe that life is sacred and it is inherently, it has inherent worth. So I believe that we need to make life a viable option, and right now it's not. I think that the cost of living is one of the reasons why people choose to get abortions. And we need to take a look at that. I think that when we look at countries who have supported families and made it possible for people to feel like they can thrive while they're still having families and having children, we see that abortion rates go down. So why don't we start working towards those interventions? So I think that, you know, I say it like this. I'm a person of faith, and I would say that God is pro-choice, choose life, and make life a viable option. And also we need to make sure that doctors don't feel like they're going to go to jail if they perform an emergency surgery or an emergency procedure to make sure that they're preserving the life of the mother. And it's sad to me to hear that, you know, there are doctors who are like, I don't think I can. I don't think I can do that. And I was an EMT. I wouldn't want a woman to wonder if she can get help if she had an ectopic pregnancy or if she had placenta abruptiva and she was at risk. I think that for me, when it comes to the pro-life and pro-choice issue, I was raised in a fairly conservative background. And I always thought that it was just like the worst thing ever to have an abortion. That's what I was raised in. And then I mentored a teen girl who was pregnant. And she had lost her mother the year before. And she was carrying this baby in high school that she had that, you know, she got pregnant. She wanted that baby more than anything in this world. But the baby had trisomy 13. And I was there when I saw the ultrasound and I saw there was no brain there and I saw the doctor try to gently tell her that this is not a viable pregnancy. And she was so distraught, she just got up from the table and walked out. And I said, I'm going with her. And she said, I don't know what to do because he had offered a DNC in Chapel Hill. And I told her, I was like, I don't know. I can't make this decision for you. And I was really glad that I can put that in her hands because she had so much taken away. She needed to have a choice. And she actually chose to carry full term, and the baby was a stillborn baby. And we walked her through that. And at the end of the day, we honored her with the dignity of making that choice. And I just think that we make this a very black and white issue rather than honoring the complexity of it. And that's what I really think that we need to bring into this conversation is that complexity, that nuance, and finding ways to support women in making the choice that they want to make, not what they have to make because there are so few options.
So would you go back to the legislation that passed a couple years ago, or would you leave that law on the books and just approach the issue from other ways? In a world where you could say there's a world in which you could caucus with Democrats and Republicans and you could pull together a bipartisan team that, you know, could rewrite the law the way you want it, the way you think is best for New Hanover County, would you leave the law on the books or would you change it?
You know, honestly, I have not read that bill completely. And so I will do that and I'll get back to you.
Okay, fair enough.
I'll do that.
It's a tough topic.
That is a tough subject, but I don't think it's an impossible subject and it's something that I need to have an answer for the people where I stand on it because when I am asking for signatures, I'm not asking for a vote. I'm asking for people to decide if I'm somebody who they would trust with that responsibility or would like to see more of what I have to say. And I had honestly chose to run about a month ago. And there's a lot that I do need to learn. I think there's, I mean, I've obviously been doing the work for a long time in on local issues. People know exactly where I stand on local issues. And there are some state issues that I do need to do more homework on. But I think that my track record proves that I'm not afraid of hard work. I'm not afraid of studying an issue. I'm not afraid of taking a stand on an issue. And I am collaborative in nature.
All right. A couple more state level issues I wanted to ask about, because these are the things we hear from people the most. Over the last 2 years, one of the top things has been parental rights legislation. So this covers a lot of things, whether that is, you know, students' use of pronouns in school, or what's in school libraries, or what's in school classrooms. Do you feel like the General Assembly has struck an appropriate balance between what a parent should know about what goes on in the school and the need to, say, you know, respect educators and school administrators to, you know, run their own shop?
So I would say that I'll put it to you like this. I went to private school, and my parents paid for private school because they wanted us to have a specific kind of experience. And when I got to, I don't know, later elementary school, we started going to public schools, and we never tried to control how the state would run their schools. Because that was, if we wanted to do that, we would just stay in private school. So I think that public schools should be public. And there should be, obviously we should have influence from parents in society, because, you know, we elect officials who make rules and all of those kind of things. And we're part of the public too. It's not just like the state runs the school and we just have to put up with whatever. But I think that we've gone into like a dangerous place where we're allowing people to ban books because they don't like them. Not even that they've read them. They just don't like them, or they don't like what they're talking about. And they might even be in the minority. And their voices are still overpowering the majority. And I have a problem with that. So I think that, you know, home school is a choice, private school is a choice, and public school is a choice. And public schools need to be public, and they need to be a place where everyone feels welcome, because we all pay taxes. And so if there's a specific kind of experience folks are looking for that are more bent towards, a religious preference or a cultural preference, then I do think that that's what private school is for. I think that, yes, there are, you know, obviously, like, there should be, like, limits, but we also have to, and we can hold professionals accountable. So if there is something that is commonly seen as not beneficial to a child, then, of course, we need to address that. But I think that we're getting into culture wars rather than holding space for what schools are for, which is improving literacy, making sure that kids are prepared academically to pursue the next steps in life.
Speaking of culture wars, over the last year, we've seen several pieces of legislation come through that affects trans people, whether that's the definition of gender or access to medical care or regulations around high school and middle school athletics. Do you feel like that was... from folks on the right, I hear these pieces of legislation described as, you know, common sense pushback against the excesses of quote-unquote woke culture. And on the left, I hear this as being bigoted anti-trans legislation, you know? And I don't know if there is a middle ground there, but I'm curious how you think about it.
Oh, my goodness. Like, again, hot topics. And, you know, I think, is this what keeps most of us up at night?
I mean, this is legislation that was passed while we didn't have a budget, so it seemed important to the General Assembly.
Well, it's not. They have like one job, and it's to pass a budget. And right now, you know, their decisions are impacting, you know, 1.4, I think, or 1.5 million children to not pass a budget. And, you know, and I'm not saying that people who are trans are not important. They are, and like, this is incredibly important to doctors. But it really is a small part of our society. And I don't think that this is what keeps most families up at night. And we are willing, what's sad to me is that we're willing to, number one, demonize people for whatever their position is on this issue. Like, there is not a win on this topic. There just isn't. So, like, if you say that, you know, this is woke culture, there's going to be people that, you have the people who are on the left who are going to demonize the right, people on the right who are going to demonize the left. There are people on the right who are demonizing people who are trans. And I think we need to just stop demonizing people and see what we can do to actually help people. And so, I think that this is almost like a straw man. It's a litmus test. I think it's a distraction from real issues, honestly, that most people deal with. As far as the trans community, their rights and their personhood needs to be, you know, they deserve civil rights just like everyone else, but no more and no less than anyone else.
So would you roll back any of that legislation that's come through over the last year?
I have to be honest and say I have not read that. And I need to.
All right. All right. So last hot state topic, I promise. Gun control.
Yeah.
So this is a place where I have heard a broader spectrum of approaches from absolutist, Second Amendment enthusiasts who feel there should be no restrictions to people who feel like there should be very tight restrictions on all manners of firearms.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there is plenty of middle ground there, but I'm always curious about how individual candidates see the state's role, if any, in gun control.
I believe in the Second Amendment right. I do believe in the right to bear arms. I also believe that we do need to have gun control. And I think that most Americans agree on that. I think most Americans are in that part that say, you know, I believe in the right to bear arms. And I also think that, you know, we need to do a check. So if a person has a background of domestic violence, that they don't get a gun. If they have a prior history of potentially being dangerous with a gun and not using it for its express purpose, or, you know, we need to make sure that we're allowing people who don't have a history of using them in a way that would cause harm to society. We need to be more careful with that. And I believe that we should have background checks and things of that nature, for sure.
All right. So you said at the top, you feel like we agree on more things than maybe that we talk about, than we realize, than shows up in news headlines. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like, where do you think the, you know, unacknowledged, you know, overlap is? Like, where are these topics where you feel like, hey, people I talk to really agree on this?
I think people agree on gerrymandering very much. I think that nobody left or right or center thinks it's okay to gerrymander and cheat for seats. I think that people, by and large, believe that every child deserves a chance, and our public schools should be places where we're equipping the next generation to participate in our growing economy. I think that in 80 to 85% of people actually put their kids in public schools, so we're voting with our practice. We believe in public schools. And so I think that there's a lot of consensus there, and I also think there's consensus on gun control. And believe it or not, I think that there are a lot of people who I've talked to when I talk about abortion access. It's a hot topic, but when I talk to my friends who are very, very pro-life, I said, do you understand that this legislation means that if your daughter, God forbid, has an ectopic pregnancy or a pregnancy emergency, that she might not be able to get the care that she needs? She's like, well, I don't mean that. So people don't really know what these bills mean. And that's why I always say, okay, I can't really talk about something until I've actually read the whole legislation and I understand what it means. Because I think a lot of times people are making these opinions based on echo chambers and, you know, hot topics and memes, rather than understanding these bills and what they mean to to the people. And what I can commit to is understanding the issues and having a nuanced comprehensive position on these issues that you've named. That I can commit to.
All right, so you will be running, if you're successful with your petition, as an unaffiliated candidate. And to your point, there are more unaffiliated voters in New Hanover County and in Senate District 7 than there are Republicans or Democrats, like 20,000 more.
Right.
It's the plurality. It's the largest single group. But all that said, you know, there is sort of left-leaning unaffiliated and right-leaning unaffiliated and sort of eclectic people who are unaffiliated. There's lots of different kinds of unaffiliated.
Right.
Right. So if you could lose all the Democratic votes, all the Republican votes, just get unaffiliated, you could still win.
Right.
But, you know, you do have to appeal to folks who lean left and folks who lean right if that was the way you were doing this. So are there places where you think, because some of your policies do seem like they are more left-leaning policies, are there points on which you feel like you are conservative and would represent more conservative-leaning unaffiliated voters?
I mean, I think that my issue on making life a viable option, I think that that's really difficult for some people on the left side. Because, you know, they want abortion on demand. And I'm like, well, it's my body, my choice. I'm like, yeah, there's also another heartbeat there. There's also another brainwave. And there's also a sentient being of some sort inside of you who responds to pain. And I think that they deserve some protection. And we need to take that very seriously. And also not at the same time, not demonizing people for making choices when we don't know their options. And so I think that, I would say that I've probably, you know, alienated some people on the left in some ways because I do see it as a more nuanced issue that we need to have a complex room to breathe kind of policy on. People would prefer I take a black or white issue on it. I can't. And, you know, this is another thing people should know about me. I'm a very complex individual in myself. I'm biracial. I'm multi-ethnic and multicultural. And I grew up in a context where I understood balance. I understood the beauty of diversity within my own home and a diversity of thought within my own home, politically, in every kind of way, I was surrounded by diversity and complexity and came to peace with it. So I know that it can happen. And so I think that a lot of things like that people would want to say are a black-white issue, maybe I'm not quite where they want me to be. And I would say, you know, the trans issue, I honestly haven't read the bill, so I can't really comment to it. And I think that people would say, well, if you can't tell me right now where you stand on that, then you're written off. And I think that's where we need to stop. I would like to enter the idea that we need to stop demonizing people for just period. It is nobody's place to demonize anyone for their ideas. I even came out and spoke to Charlie Kirk. I didn't like his ideas. I would probably go toe to toe with him on a lot of the ideas that he had. However, we do not fight words with weapons. We fight them with words and ideas. And if your idea prevails and you can present your argument in a more persuasive way, then people will be persuaded to believe you. And I think that that's the problem right now in America. We just want to see, well, do they agree with me? Because if they do, then I'll support them. Like, how about we take a step back and find out where we can find common ground and support one another? And I think that, you know, with the, for example, with the hot topic of the trans issue, it's like, you have one side that is trying to beat the other side over the head with the Bible, and then you have another side that's saying, you know, if you don't accept me exactly how I am and can do what I want to do, when I want to do it, where I want to do it, then you're bad. So all we're going to get is beating each other over the head, saying, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad. And I'm like, well, why can't we find solutions where we all feel respected? And I think that that's really why I'm running and why I'm running as an unaffiliated and not with a party is because I really think that we need to change the way that we view politics and see that we can honor one another and create space for one another politically and respect and defend the rights of one another without exceeding our boundaries.
All right, last question, and I've seen this in a couple of posts online. What do you feel about people who think that you are just going to be a spoiler candidate for the Democratic challenger, Jessica Bickler, against Michael Lee?
I say leave it up to the people. And this is a dry run. If there are 7,000 people who are willing to sign a petition for me to file, then that is a good indication that Wilmington, New Hanover County is ready for something new and would like to see something new. And, you know, I know that there are people who are upset that I'm running, but I think that democracy improves when there are choices. And I'm willing to be a choice. And maybe New Hanover County will say, yeah, she's not our girl. And that's fine. That is fine because I really don't want to be there and people to say, I want to change her. You know, let's just get her there and then I can change her. No, I am who I am. You know who I am. And I'm always willing to, you know, have the conversation and evolve. Like, I have evolved in my ideas because I learned more information. But no, I want people I believe New Hanover County has already let us know that neither party really represents them. And perhaps, maybe, just maybe, I'm the voice they're looking for. And, you know, I also see it as in the Jim Crow South in the 30s, there was an expectation when there were two people walking down the sidewalk, and if one was black and one was white, and there wasn't room for both, the unsaid rule was a black person would avert their eyes and step to the side. Is that what they're asking me to do?
Are you suggesting that frustration with your run is racially motivated?
I'm not saying it's racially motivated, but it is, in a sense, it is the same kind of play. It's like an unaffiliated has less of a right to run.
You're not playing by the institutional rules.
I'm not. And I don't think that... I think that we shouldn't be deciding for the people who they get to choose. And a lot of people will say, well, you won't have the money behind you. You won't have, like, this organization behind you.
There will be a lot of money in this race. I guarantee you millions of dollars will go into this race.
And maybe people will decide that some of that money should come in the direction of an unaffiliated person. And if you do, I will take it. You email me at info@runwithrebecca.com. But if, you know, I think we need to also think about how, that's another thing I think should change as well, how we finance politics. Because I don't think that the American vote should be for sale. I think it's already been bought, in fact, by the blood of our soldiers. The sweat of our activists is already been paid for. We have a vote. It's how we use it. And I don't think that we should be limiting our choices. I think that we should be advancing policies that improve the lives of everyday people. And if we do, we should let them choose us.
I think that's a pretty good place to leave it. But anything else you would want to tell potential petition signers?
Please follow me on... you know, follow my website, come to my website, visit it, engage with us, volunteer with us. If you're interested in signing my petition to file, please email me at info@runwithrebecca.com, and we'll make sure that you can do that. There's ways that you can get involved. I'm looking for people who will open up their, you know, say, hey, I'll be a place where you can sign. And we can give you a petition and people can come to you and sign. We're getting very creative about how we do get these signatures because we want to make it accessible to everyone. And if you're interested at all in how you can be involved in helping us get these signatures, then please email us and we will get back in touch with you.
All right. Rebecca Trammell seeks to run as an unaffiliated candidate for Senate District 7. Rebecca, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, that's it for this special elections edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to my guest, Rebecca Trammell, and we'll have more information about her and her campaign on the show page. Thanks also, as always, to WHQR Program Director Ken Campbell. Music for today's show was provided by If These Trees Could Talk and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have questions, comments, concerns, or an idea for a future show, you can email us at newsroom@whqr.org. www.thenewsroom.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.